Chapter 3. Durzo Blint pulled himself on top of the small estate's wall and watched the guard pass. The perfect guard, Durzo thought. A bit slow, lacking imagination, and dutiful. He took his 39 steps, stopped at the corner, planted his halberd, scratched his stomach under his gambeson, checked in all directions, then walked on. 35. 36. Durzo slipped out of the man's shadow and eased himself over the edge of the walkway. He held on by his fingertips. Now. He dropped and hit the grass just as the guard thumped the butt of his halberd on the wood walkway. He doubted the guard would have heard him anyway, but paranoia begat perfection in the wet boy's trade. The yard was small, and the house not much bigger. It was built on the Siurin design, with translucent rice-paper walls. Bald cypress and white cedar formed the doors and arches, and cheaper local pine had been used for the frame and the floors. It was Spartan, like all Siurin houses, and that fit General Aegon's military background and his ascetic personality. More than that, it fit his budget. Despite the general's many successes, King Davin had not rewarded him well, which was part of why the wet boy had come. Durzo found an unlocked window on the second floor. The general's wife was asleep in the bed. They weren't so Siurin as to sleep on woven mats. They were, however, poor enough that the mattress was stuffed with straw rather than feathers. The general's wife was a plain woman, snoring gently and sprawled more in the middle than to one side of the bed. The covers on the side she was facing had been disturbed. The wet boy slid into the room, using his talent to soften the sound of his footsteps on the hardwood floor. Curious. A quick glance confirmed that the general hadn't just come for a nocturnal conjugal visit. They actually shared the room. Perhaps he was even poorer than people thought. Durzo's brow furrowed under his mask. It was a detail he didn't need to know. He drew the short, poisoner's knife and walked toward the bed. She'd never feel a thing. He stopped. The woman was turned toward the disturbed covers. She'd been sleeping close to her husband before he got up, not on the far side of the bed, the way a woman merely doing her marital duties would. It was a love match. After her murder, Aline Gunder had planned to offer the general a quick remarriage to a rich noblewoman. But this general, who'd married a low-born woman for love, would react quite differently to his wife's murder than a man who'd married for ambition. The idiot. The prince was so consumed with ambition that he thought everyone else was, too. The wet boy sheathed the knife and stepped into the hall. He still had to know where the general stood, immediately. "Damn it, man. King Davin's dying. I'd be surprised if he's got a week left." Whoever had spoken was mostly right. The wet boy had given the king his final dose of poison tonight. By dawn, he would be dead, leaving a throne in contention between one man who was strong and just and another who was weak and corrupt. The underworld Sakage was not disinterested in the outcome. The voice had come from the receiving room downstairs. The wet boy hurried to the end of the hall. The house was so small that the receiving room doubled as the study. He had a perfect view of the two men. General Brant Aegon had a graying beard, close-trimmed hair that he didn't comb, and a jerky way of moving, keeping his eyes on everything. He was thin and sinewy, his legs slightly bowed from a life in the saddle. The man across from him was Duke Regnus Gyre. The wing-backed chair creaked as he shifted his weight. He was a huge man, both tall and wide, and little of his bulk was fat. He folded ringed fingers on his belly. "By the night angels, I could kill them both and end the Nine's worries right now.
Are we deceiving ourselves, Brant? Duke Gyre asked.
The general didn't answer immediately.
My lord.
No, Brant. I need your opinion as a friend, not as a vassal. Durzo crept closer. He drew the throwing knives slowly, careful with the poisoned edges.
If we do nothing, the general said, Alain Gunder will become king. He is a weak, foul, and faithless man. The Sakage already owns the Warrens. The king's patrols won't even leave the main roads, and you know all the reasons that's only bound to get worse. The death games entrenched the Sakage. Alain doesn't have the will or the inclination to oppose the Sakage now, while we can still root them out. So are we deceiving ourselves in thinking that you'd be a better king?
Not at all.
And the throne is yours by rights.
Blint almost smiled. The Underworld's lords, the Sakage Nine, agreed with every word, which was why Blint was making sure Regnus Gyre didn't become king.
And tactically, could we do it?
With minimal bloodshed. Duke Wesseros is out of the country. My own regiment is in the city. The men believe in you, my lord. We need a strong king, a good king. We need you, Regnus.
Duke Gyre looked at his hands.
And Alain's family? They'll all be part of the minimal bloodshed?
The general's voice was quiet.
You want the truth?
Yes.
Even if we don't order it, one of our men will kill them to protect you, even if it meant hanging. They believe in you that much.
Duke Gyre breathed.
So the question is, does the good of many in the future outweigh the murder of a few now?
How long has it been since I had such qualms? Durzo barely stifled an overpowering urge to throw the daggers.
The suddenness of his rage shook him. What was this about? It was Regnus. The man reminded him of another king he'd once served, a king worthy of it.
That's for you to answer, my lord, General Aegon said. But if I may, is the question really so philosophical?
What do you mean?
You still love Nalia, don't you?
Nalia was Alain Gunder's wife. Regnus looked stricken.
I was betrothed to her for 10 years, Brant.
We were each other's first lovers.
My lord, I'm sorry, the general said. It's not my...
No, Brant. I never speak of it.
As I decide whether to be a man or a king, let me. He breathed deeply.
It's been 15 years since Nalia's father broke our betrothal and married her to that dog, Alain. I should be over it.
I am, except when I have to see her with her children and have to imagine her sharing a bed with Alain Gunder. The only joy my marriage has given me is my son, Logan, and I can scarce believe her own has been better.
My lord, given the involuntary nature of both of your weddings, could you not divorce Katrina and marry...
No.
Regnus shook his head.
If the queen's children live, they will always be a threat to my son, whether I exile them or adopt them. Nalia's eldest boy is 14, too old to forget that he was destined for a throne.
The right is on your side, my lord.
And who knows but that answers unforeseen may arise to these problems once you sit on the throne.
Regnus nodded unhappily, obviously knowing he held hundreds or thousands of lives in his hands, not knowing he held his own as well.
If he plots rebellion, I'll kill him now, I swear by the Night Angels. I serve only the Sakage now. And myself. Always myself.
May generations unborn forgive me, Regnus Gyre said, tears gleaming in his eyes.
but I will not commit murder for what may be, Brant. I cannot. I will swear fealty.
The wet boy slid the daggers back into their sheaths, ignoring the twin feelings of relief and despair he felt.
It's that damned woman. She's ruined me. She's ruined everything.
Blint saw the ambush from 50 paces away and walked right into its teeth. The sun was still an hour from rising, and the only people on the twisting streets of the Warrens were merchants who'd fallen asleep where they shouldn't have and were hurrying home to their wives. The guild, Black Dragon from the guild glyphs he'd passed, was hiding around a narrow choke point in the alley where guild rats could spring up to clog both ends of the street and also attack from the low rooftops. He had affected a bad right knee and pulled his cloak tight around his shoulders, the hood pulled low over his face. As he limped into the trap, one of the older children, a big, as they called them, jumped into the alley ahead of him and whistled, brandishing a rusty saber. Guild rats surrounded the wet boy.
"Clever," Durzo said. "You keep a lookout before dawn when most of the other guilds are sleeping, and you're able to jump a few bags who've been out all night whoring. They don't want to explain any bruises from fighting to their wives, so they hand over their coins. Not bad. Whose idea was it?"
"Azoth's," a big said, pointing past the wet boy.
"Shut up, Roth," the guild head said.
The wet boy looked at the smaller boy on the rooftop. He was holding a rock aloft, his pale blue eyes intent. "Ready." He looked familiar.
"Oh, now you've given him away," Durzo said.
"You shut up too,"
the guild head said, shaking the saber at him.
"Hand over your purse or we'll kill you."
"Jalaliel," a black guild rat said. "He called them bags. A merchant wouldn't know we call them that. He's Sakage."
"Shut up, Jarl. We need this."
Jalaliel coughed and spat blood.
"Just give us your—"
"I don't have time for this. Move," Durzo said.
"Hand it."
The wet boy darted forward, his left hand twisting Jalaliel's sword hand, snatching the saber, and his body spinning in. His right elbow cracked against the guild head's temple, but he pulled the blow so it wouldn't kill. The fight was over by the time the guild rats flinched.
"I said I don't have time for this," Durzo said.
He threw back his hood. He knew he was nothing special to look at. He was lanky and sharp-featured, with dark blonde hair and a wispy blonde beard over lightly pockmarked cheeks. But he might have had 3 heads from the way the children shrank back.
"Durzo Blint,"
Roth murmured. Rocks rattled to the ground.
"Durzo Blint!"
The name passed through the guild rats in waves. He saw fear and awe in their eyes. They'd just tried to mug a legend.
He smirked. "Sharpen this. Only an amateur lets his blade rust."
He threw the saber into a gutter clotted with sewage. Then he walked through the mob. They scattered, as if he might kill them all. Azoth watched him stride into the early morning mists, disappearing like so many other hopes into the sinkhole of the Warrens. Durzo Blint was everything Azoth wasn't. He was powerful, dangerous, confident, fearless. He was like a god. He'd looked at the whole guild arrayed against him, even the bigs like Roth and Jalaliel and Rat, and he'd been amused.
Amused!
Someday, Azoth swore. He didn't quite dare even to think the whole thought, lest Blint sense his presumption. But his whole body yearned for it.
Someday.
When Blint was far enough away not to notice, Azoth followed.